on Slime Life Records. That ain't working. Do a stupid podcast. Got your muskies for nothing. Big girls for free. I said, that ain't working. Do a stupid podcast. Got your muskies for nothing. Fat girls for free. Who could resist the greatest muskie fishing songs of the 1980s? Exclusively from Slime Life Records.
Elmer's on a fishing trip far away. He drove all the way to Plover. So many baits that he wants to take. You know he likes his boats a little bit older. I just wanna fish some grubs tonight. Yeah, I don't wanna lose my grub tonight.
Hey folks, this is Steve Urban. As you all well know, I probably don't remember much from the 70s and 80s, but these are the greatest muskie songs of all time.
Forget the greatest song ever recorded about solo muskie angling. No 1980s muskie compilation would be complete without JSE's hit about custom show colors.
But I see your show colors shine through. See your show colors, you got smooth. But don't be afraid to let them troll.
Hi folks, this is Elmer Jensen, and I can assure you that these songs are the best muskie songs ever made.
your chance to own the greatest muskie fishing classics from the 1980s. Elmer's standing by!
Slime Life Records Muskie Fishing Hits of the 80s is available exclusively on CD, cassette, 8-track, and Betamax.
Folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. Jaybird.
Steve.
Was your stocking stuffed?
Big time. Great Christmas.
Great Christmas. Yep.
How about you?
Oh, yeah. You know it. So, great time. Good times, great oldies.
So, super duper.
Yeah,
nice.
Frickin'. I'll tell you what, though, just... The little bit of lovely weather we had there is gone. It was freakazoid. I don't know what you hit, but there were freakazoid warm temps. Like, might I even say 70 degrees, Jay?
Oh, man. Well, I was in southern Wisconsin. Yeah, there's some low 40s like every day, basically. Yeah. It's just beautiful. There's mud.
Nah, this was glorious. And then today, I will tell you, it was one of the hardest changes or hardest transitions you go through. Had to get at it, you know. Holidays are in the rear view. My little slice of glory of not having to do anything is over, right?
Mm-hmm.
Get lined up on this thing. The weather's gonna break. It's been nice and stable, you know, warmer than it should be. And then kind of slowing down. Today was one of those days where it starts off and, you know, once you get into right at sunrise, 44 degrees, and that's as warm as it's going to be. And then it's falling off a cliff after that.
Okay. So that you've is. You've got that big front that we had starting yesterday afternoon. Yeah, brutal.
That is nothing weirder than, you know, the sun comes up, it should be warming up. My thumb is still not right. I'm just going to put it that way. My entire right thumb feels still kind of weird. But it was interesting to see. There are some things that kind of aligned there, but the timing and seeing the activity level right before that front game.
Okay.
Kind of learned some things today. Put a really nice fish in the boat. I'm talking real, real nice. Real, real, real nice.
Okay. Send me a picture.
Yeah, I will. But it wasn't a 50, but it's as close as you can get without it being one, if you know what. It's
awesome.
The dreaded nice. 49. Not dreaded, but whatever.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
That just one of the rarer muskies, you know. Oh, not many 49s in the world. They all end up being 50s, but there was 49. Nonetheless, in that scenario where impending doom is all you can look at, and I told my folks this morning, I said, we have to get it done, and we got to get it done quick, no matter what. But actually noticed in that front, a lot of suspended fish. It was interesting to see because what do we always talk about in a cold front? That they're going to pull off of structure and go deeper.
Yeah, right? Bottom huggers, sure.
Bottom huggers. But it was interesting to see this transition from deep edge to went ahead and if you can imagine, conceptualize this, the boat's in 25, you're throwing your target zones really like 8 to 12, right?
Right.
Well, that's where they've been structurally tight or oriented. And instead, they in this front, I mean, we're on the cusp. You can basically see it happen. You can actually, my ears popped as things coming through, and then you get 40-mile-an-hour winds, all that fun stuff. With scope, it was cool to watch and actually drive over top of some of these fish that are just, oh, they're at 12, but they just slid out. You just went, boop, sliding away from that edge. And it was almost like, okay, is that a preparatory move? You know, did they feel it coming? Like, because it's typically, it's not the move that they were doing. But it's like, I think, honestly, I think I caught like kind of a glimpse 3 or 4 times of fish that were in the midst of transition, which is not all, you don't often get that, right? Like,
okay.
They're in stage to A, and their home range is C, and they might be on B, but you don't catch them moving in between very much. right? And there was about 45 minutes of that, which was kind of cool. And, you know, the weird thing was the bait ended up where I was seeing them before. Does that make any sense? So everybody just kind of cha-cha slided one position over. Like, ah, all right, everybody shift to the deep. And then everything moved. So that was interesting. Again, not hanging my hat on it, but pretty interesting to see of being observant. But, you know, that is a tough transition. It's one of those shocking things. But, you know, getting right in front of it, right there at the end, because I felt like I saw this really intense band of activity, right before that front really changed over. And I'm talking, you know, a lot of times, Jay, a big front like that, it's being driven by some really substantial wind, right?
Yeah,
it's always
right.
You get to the backside of a front and it starts howling most of the time. Yeah. And it, like, the howling happened. Obviously there's a chop, obviously there's a lowering of light penetration, but at that point, if you're already at that kind of depth, does light penetration matter that much? You know, chicken or the egg. But that, when that wind kicked in, that's when they started firing, and immediately there's the clouds cleared and you got those high wispy, those high clouds that just mean impending doom, and it could, boom, it's over. You know, an immediate bait shift change. So it was neat. Like I said, it's an electronics observation. Obviously, the fish were cooperative, but it was kind of interesting to see that in real time a little bit more, because I had enough action that I could kind of go, they're all kind of doing the same thing. Does that make sense? Like, it's not like I saw one. It's like I saw a dozen, you know, over a pretty good stretch of water. But all of them kind of making that move. So that was kind of interesting other than that. So I know you got some snow, didn't you? You're up there shoveling.
Yeah, we got a foot of snow. Yeah, a lot of snow. A lot of snow, a lot of wind, and falling temps.
Yeah,
I don't like what you're doing, but much colder.
Yeah. Man, listen, you don't have to live there. So at least the thing is this, though, for all the crossover people, the people that go up and ice fish a little bit, all that fun stuff, are the trails open and all that garbage now?
Yeah, the snowmobile trails needed it badly, so yeah. They were borderline unrideable, and now everyone's in Seventh Heaven just popping wheelies all over the place. I saw snowmobiles stuck on the way home. They're trying to cross ditches and stuff, and there's too much snow in there. A lot of people ice fishing, too. They're going to deal with it. It's going to cause some problems because the ice isn't super thick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with that much snow on relatively thin ice, you know, there's going to be some water problems, but that's it for snow. There was no snow on the ice 24 hours ago, basically. So it's not catastrophic. And there's a lot of people out ice fishing today, and a lot of people stopped in. So that's cool to see.
Well, I mean, bring it up, because the last couple of years, it's just been horrible.
For snowmobiling especially. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great ice fishing conditions last year for the most part. Yeah. So we got both going on, and let's hope it lasts.
Get up there and ride the sled 400 miles an hour. Not my.
Now, you know, neighbor Steve's doing that right now.
I'm sure he is. No, it's one of those deals. If you look at that entire area, you know, all these northern tourist areas, whether it be some of the places the people ice fish Lake of the Woods, people ice fish Eagle, you know, they're ice fishing all over Northwoods, and it's when you have bad ice, you know, or and there's not those drivers. That's why we bring it up, because you know, there a couple of those years that went by where there was not a substantive freeze up or thick enough, you know, the snow packs for the snowmobiles, yada, yada, yada. The amount of economic damage it did up there. There is actually a piece, I think I mentioned previously, but there was a piece in the New Yorker, folks, about that there was no snowmobiling. That's how economically impactful it was up there. So
big time. Yeah, absolutely. You know, that was 2 years ago. And last year wasn't much better. Yeah.
Sit around and read the New Yorker and Musky Fish anyway.
Who doesn't?
All of them, Jay. That's who doesn't. None of them. Anyway, I don't think we have to be too concerned about the comings and the goings over at the Muskie Shop, other than people have been gone. It's gift card mania, Jay.
It's drawing to a close, but we've still got them.
No, I'm saying spending them. People have been enjoying their Christmas booty.
Yep.
Which is good.
Time to spend that free money. Yep. We're open every day.
Free money to pay your bills. Well, we better get after some, Jay. This is the post-Christmas hangover, not the big New Year's blowout here. We went crazy with Herbie last week, so we're going to catch up on some Q&A.
That was right. That was supposed to be an in-betweener episode, is what you're saying to me.
Yeah, we're going to get there. We got the big New Year's thing. So, got some good luck with your packages. Everything's going to catch up here. I got the guys that won the last one, the last Q&A little thing there.
The Steve Stash deal.
Out in the mail. Good. We'll do one next week. Send them in. We'll do the big first of the year Q&A roundup to win some cool stuff. It'll be worth your time. So send some questions in for that, and we'll get after it. So let's play catch up just a bit.
Okay. Right?
We're just going to be losers here this week. What do you got? David, Southern Boy here, been doing a lot of trolling lately. With the colder waters, how slow is too slow to troll? And colder temps. Also, just got the blade planter boards. And thank you, whoever deserves a credit for the design, flawless trolling them now. That would be me. Thank you. If you didn't know that, that is a little project we did there on the blades. But Josh Hackensmith, good friend of mine, helped build the protos on that, and it happened. So good deal. How cold or how slow is too slow to troll in colder temps? So that comes down to the lure itself.
True.
Right? So you take, let's think about as slow and stupid, like stupid slow you could get. Say, and it's not a traditional trolling lure, but a Magnus, a Susie Sucker, a Poseidon, right? You can creep a swim bait. You can creep a spinner bait, especially like Colorado bladed swimmer or spinner baits. You can crawl them. So Josh Krieger was on the boat winter's back, Jay, the slowest, dumbest pattern I have ever been on.
Okay, right? Here we go.
1-1.
I was going to say 1-1.
Uh-huh, man.
That's cool. 1-1. Okay.
So, that is trolling for muskies with the trolling motor. Couldn't get my boat slow enough.
Right.
1-1 was the magic number. And what that was the
spinner baits?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. It's been a minute here, but it was the Steve's Meat Grinder, and I had those with a swim bait style trailer. Remember the Lunker City bodies? It's essentially like a 6-inch paddle tail.
The salt shakers.
Right. Do we still have those?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. So trying to get as much thump at low speed as I could. So I have the Steve's Meat Grinder, and then I'm taking, I want to say, it, and this is a single hook, this is not a treble, I believe it was a 9, right? The bigger trailer hook that you could get, the biggest spinnerbait trailer hook I could, rigging that up so I had some hook there, right? And dragging the bottom at 15 feet. That was the bite. I know from Danny Herbeck, he has seen a late season pattern that was not dissimilar by dragging the Savage Gear Burbot tubes. I don't know what his speed was, but I know it was below 2. Right? So, there is no too slow. You just have to be using baits that can deal with it. Now, what happens when we go slow? That reduces our ability to cover water. The way I look at it, for what it's worth at this point, is when it comes to trolling ultra slow, right? I'm almost thinking of it. Not, how do I put this? It's trolling, but I'm holding the rod for the hook set and setting the hook like a casting hook set, right? So the trolling, the boat is advancing the lure because I need substantial depth control, right? So I have plenty of line out. I want to say, Jay, and don't, you know, shoot me if I'm wrong, I want to say my magic number was like 95 or 96 feet of line at that time to achieve the depth that I wanted at 1-1, and that was it. So I've got a lot of line out. The bait is going very slow. The muskies are not, obviously, at those speeds, they're not moving like crazy fast. They're not hitting crazy fast. So I was hand-holding and then setting the hook. So somewhat
hand-holding so you could feel contact with the bottom, because I imagine every once in a while those things are bumping. And
yeah, and that's what I was getting at. Is it at those speeds, to me, it is almost, that's what I was getting at. I was like, yeah, it's trolling. It's kind of a blend. It's a hybrid thing. I've talked about in the past about hybrid trolling jerk baits, right? Your triple Ds, your Rachels, your suspending baits, to keep them down and all this other stuff. When I was doing this, I wasn't sitting down. I would have myself on one side, my client on another side. Let's say I had two people in the boat that day. I would have one straight behind the boat, right? You know, I want your rod pointed at the top of the motor and you're standing at the big engine, which is turned off at that time, and we're holding them and we're delivering the baits at depth. Because casting that presentation out to hit the same target depth and reeling it up, we were not getting the same soak time, if you will. The baits were not as in contact with the bottom, yada, yada, yada. So at that point, when I'm at one, or if I'm below two and I'm musky trolling, I am hand holding as much as I can because you need the hook set, right? And a lot of times in a situation like that, if we're doing, say, a spinnerbait troll, is we need to make sure that we're not fouled up or we're not dredging the bottom, whether it be old weeds or, you know, this time of year, Jay, you get in the cold water period. And it's the same for you guys up north. You got the dead and dying weeds are gone, but some of that old scungy dead stuff on the bottom, right?
Yeah, for sure, right.
And so it's really hard to tell at the rod tip what your bait's doing at those slow speeds. So it's good to have that tactile feel in your hands. Then you translate that a hook set. So that's the slowest that I've done. I don't think a lot of people spend much time below the mid twos, right? But if you look at the possibilities there, right, to cover water in a hybrid manner, I think that's one of the least utilized things that people do, which is, and I said, we've done, actually there's a video on the Muskie Shop TV on the tubes of you there, where it is the jerk troll or hybrid trolling thing that I've done with the Rachels and the triple Ds, which, if you don't know what a triple D is or Rachel, the Rachel is the Livingston version, the triple D's the ERC version. They're pretty dang similar. It's a suspending crankbait jerk bait. So you crank it down to depth. When you snap the line, it's got much more of a jerk bait approach, mannerisms kind of feel to it, and it's deadly suspending. It's as about as suspending as you can get. Well, if we need to work it at depth, I have realized that once I get it down there, it's far, far more impactful for me to just snap that thing, create slack and hang time while manipulating the rod, but using the boat to advance, right? I'm staying at depth the whole time. Until I decide to reel that bait up, I'm keeping it at the depth that I'm targeting for as long as I want to target it, and I'm foregoing the cast entering and exiting and wasting time and efficiency. So from an efficiency standpoint, there are times where that hybrid methodology works. Now, You take that and you go, okay, you're snapping a triple D or a double D. Even in cold temperatures, something that I do, especially this time of year, let's say theoretically, we are in 45, 50, you know, 49, 45 degree water, right?
Okay.
That's pretty bottom tight. It's a bottom tight kind of water temp for southern waters. Well, am I going to waste my time and cast, say, an alien in or a bulldog, throw it out, let it hit, rip it back, rip it back, rip it back, come in, do a little figure eight, and then cast it back out. And I'm repeating this process, targeting a break line, right? So let's say I'm looking at an edge, and the edge goes from, obviously it starts at zero, but it breaks down to, say, 20 feet, per kind of typical stuff. Your target zone's, say, it's 8 feet, or your target zone's 8 to 12. Well, casting it in, getting it to target depth, and then bringing it out obviously is effective, but at times, if you're really dialed in, dragging it over it and hybrid pulling it, letting the slack build, let the boat take the slack of the line and jerking it down these edges is just as effective, if not more so, right? Which is using the boat to advance keeps the bait at depth. And so that's something I think that's tremendously, tremendously overlooked and underutilized, right? No one's really doing it, but it's one of my favorite things to do because I go, well, if I need my bait there, why am I wasting time to get my bait there with some of these baits that the magic, the juice behind them is not them splashing on the surface and working them to depth. The magic is they're intersecting a muskie at depth and mm-hmm. pulling right, off the bottom. Right. And so, you know, that's something to not overlook. You know, you look goofy, you know, you can jerk troll anything, but you, whatever. I'm cold and tired and rambling. Have you ever tried, and Sean says, have you ever tried a FJ knot for your braid to fluoro leader? Jay uses a ZJ knot.
An FJ knot?
Let me see.
I don't think I have.
I know it. I just want to make sure which one this is. So F. Oh, he said F. Did he write? He wrote FJ, but it's a FG. Surely. Right. So it is. An FG knot is one of these overlapping. Almost like a snail. I mean, they're all knots. Don't get me wrong, right? But this would be one of your cleanest connections if you wanted to tie to fluoro and have absolutely no swivel, no connection other than, I mean, it's a line-to-line connection that's kind of fly fisherman-y, if you will.
Meant for very long leaders so you could actually reel through the guides?
Right, like an all-bright. Okay. In the application, though, for the FG knots is like you said, Jay, generally something you can reel through, right? You could definitely use it for muskies. When I've tried to do a line-to-line with braid to fluoro, right, you end up getting slippage. And it always freaks me out. Now, am I sitting around practicing my all-brights and my FG knots? No. The benefit of that would be, you know, a clean transition through the rod tip. However, I don't know if it's beneficial in musky fishing, right? Where in general purposes, that could be, whatever. I know Herbie, I believe it's only on like his Kraken rod and like tubes Krakens. He'll tie an Albright, you know, and he's trying to eliminate anything that's going to get kind of lines and fouls and anything of that nature. So, you know, if you want a super clean signal chain, yeah, that could be useful. But I don't know. I mean, I've not. Jay, do you know anybody else that uses any of the really clean line-to-line knots? Because I can't. application wise, I'm sure if you're going maximum stealth and yada yada yada, but I don't know if it's going to really change the world. What are your thoughts? Getting fancy.
The nail knot is the way to go. I thought that was what most people use in that application. They use that a lot when making leaders out of fluorocarbon, but
right.
Main line to floral line with no swivel.
Yeah.
Nail knot. You know, the thing is that fluorocarbon is so coarse. It's so thick. I mean, if you went down to 60, it's like, it's almost tieable. But you go above 60, that stuff, you have to use one of these alternative knots for fluorocarbon, like a nail knot, and get a nail knot tool to do it right, to do it real clean. But
oh, I can do it.
That's the extent I know.
See, I use nail knots for my fly rigs, though. That's the one knot that I do, and just, you know. That's the fanciest of the knots that I use, and it serves the same purpose as a FG or a Albright or whatever the heck, Alberto, all these stupid knot names. But I mean,
you made it if you've got a knot named after you, though, Steve. Yeah, really, you know what I mean?
Well, like I said, I'm trying to think what would that really help with, you know. To me, I know those are solid knots. It just freaks me out tying to fluoro, like especially if you're 100 pounds or above.
You know, well, try a Stemke knot.
Try a Stemke knot. Yeah. Anyway, good on you. Okay. What does this say, Jake? Hey, boys, looking for a good rod size to fish while wading 40 to 60 foot wide local creeks. What do you think, Jay? Wade, that's interesting. Wading. What you got?
Depends on the overhang issue. You know, if you got a lot of branches and a lot of trees, you're constantly going around a super long rod. You don't probably need a super long rod. You might be better off with something shorter, 8 foot or shorter, because... Yeah. You can, you know, it's not super wide. You're not probably making bomb casts too often. So, the thing with creek wading, you know, we were just talking about that the other day, you know.
Yeah.
You're creeking and stuff like that, and it's just like a lot of them are tight, you know. There's junk everywhere.
I just picked up I actually called Jay, what, day before yesterday. Mm-hmm. Ran a little errand, picked up a hot new creeking rig.
Creeking rig!
Hot new. Is this if I needed my house? Looks like a boatyard. I got not really, but it's getting close. There's five.
So five back there. Okay.
Five. I was trying to do a quick head count. That does not count small personal watercraft. But
that's counting the gray squirrel, though. Jody's rig, right?
That's the pink squirrel now.
It is. Okay. I did not know that.
But anyway, nonetheless, picked up the new creaking rig. And when I'm taking that guy out, you know, if I'm John boat fishing, or with like this new setup, which is one of your hard plastic, not a bass and buggy, but I got one of those pelican boats. With that setup, I'm telling you, that is where my old St. Croix Premier 6.6 and 7.6s get broken out. Because, I mean, if you're fishing in creeks, you're fishing, you know, kind of West Virginia style close quarters combat or bank fishing, a big long musky rod is just a pain in the ass. Getting it in and out of the boat, you're sitting there, you get it caught, you're just... In this situation, and think about this, backing it up. How accurate are your really short casts with a 9 foot or a 9.6 rod? Right? If you got to make a 30 foot cast, you're kind of pulling your punches a lot of times. If you can't sidearm, if you ever watch a video and you see me do kind of this cast, it's a lot of people mention it. And it's a short range cast. It's a little side, that wrist flip that I do, right?
Yeah,
I've seen. And they mention it. And they go, whatever. That is from fishing, kind of southern stuff. You have overhanging trees, right? You've got, you might want to hit this one shot. You got to deliver a bait. You're not going to swing that rod over top of your head, right? you're just not. You're not going to get the bait where it needs to be. So sidearming, it's a, just bass fishing move, right?
Yeah, it's like a hybrid flipping and,
right.
Flipping and, what do you call that?
Pitching.
Yeah, anyway. Right. Pitching. Yeah, exactly.
Pitching. But nonetheless, you can get extremely accurate and hit with that, right?
Oh, yeah.
But if you're coming over top of your head trying to make that shorter cast, it's kind of awkward, you know, in that same vicinity, like fishing that tight stuff. Now, if you're going like the pitching and flipping move, I can hit the same distance doing that now, but I'm talking in that scenario. It's beneficial if you have a long rod. What I'm doing in small boats, the creek and rig, all that fun stuff, is I'm using the shorter rod because sometimes on your backswing, right? If you're fishing the shallow stuff or these narrow creeks, rivers, whatever, sometimes your best move is to be really, really tight to the other shore so you have enough casting distance, right? So I just go with the short little rods, you know, 6.6s, 7.7.6. That's a good application for somebody if you got older rods laying around. Because when you're that low to the water, you're going to get your turning radius. Big, long rods in shallow water are just a nightmare anyway. But I think this same stands true. It's been a long while since I've done any straight bank fishing. We've talked about it quite a bit in the past, but you know, for a straight bank fishing thing, you're trudging through the leaves and the woods and, you know, much less you're carrying a net, you got a backpack full of gear. That's why, you know, in that application, shorten it up. But I mean, Jay, what do you got? We've got, what, 8-footers on the shield rods? Is that the
shield? That's sevens.
Are there a seven? Sevens. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's something to look Perfect. At. Yeah, you got a 7 or an 8. I mean, that if you need a 7-footer, what are the 7-footer? What are we saying the 7-footers are for? Is it just a 7-foot option, or is it just, what, 7-foot heavy?
Kayak. Yeah, kayak.
Oh, duh.
Creaking. Yeah.
Sorry. The yep. Brain dead moment. So that would be it. 7 to 8. That'll get you where you need to be. What we got here? People are sitting. Jay, these people have sat around over the holidays and said, what do we got to know? Hold on. I'm going to have to look at that one because that is a moon phase data question.
Sounds technical.
Hold on. Skipping that one. Another rod one. We're going to skip another rod one there. My apologies, folks. Keep going. Hold on. Keep going here. Man, there's a lot of rod questions, folks. I apologize. You know, some rods are just a personal thing. All right, Carl. I'm looking to get into vertical jigging this winter. I fish in the southern open areas and then some in Kentucky and Ohio. What are your recommendations for jigs? Are you doing any modifications? And how can someone get more dialed in? Jigging the bottom. Okay, great, great question as far as application. Jay, we'll go ahead and cut to the rod talk. Shorter's better on this front as well. There you go. Your 7-footer could be good for that. I'll get to it in a second. But jigging is always one of those deals where simplicity is the key, right? What happens is muskie guy gets a hunk of rubber in his hands, Jay, and he goes, it's like a bulldog or it's like a Medusa. I must manipulate. A vertical jig needs to be worked in a pretty dang simple fashion to get the most out of it.
Less is more.
Less is more. What kills people, and let's just cut to the chase, there's one vertical jig. It's a Bondi bait. Everything else kind of pales in comparison at this point. Yes, fuzzy desserts have a place, you know, in your tackle box, but let's just cut straight to the Bondis here. Okay. With the Bondi bait, heavy weighted towards the head, you got about a thing. Last time I cut one open, about 5.2 or something like that, or 4.9. That's the lead right in the head of that thing. So it falls straight vertical. The reason it falls straight vertically is because you're supposed to work it straight vertically. The kiss of death is treating these things like they're going to hop across the bottom, right? It's a boat control thing more than anything. Anybody can vertically jig. You can dig up my grandma and she could vertically jig, Jay. It doesn't take much, right? It doesn't take much to do it right. The key is boat control. That's where most people get screwy, because your boat has an insanely high influence on how well that bait is going to perform and trigger strikes. For some reason, if it's hopping across the bottom, like you're bringing it up and it's loping, and it does this lope, right? You lift it and it doesn't fall vertically. It doesn't make bottom contact. It just doesn't get the same amount of looks as straight vertical, very controlled, very slow advancing. And I think the key is the slow advancing, right? But watching, it's obviously now with live scope, it's so beneficial to see what's happening below the surface. Seeing vertical jigging presentations work correctly versus incorrectly, meaning they're not being used as intended. It's one of those ways, things where you go, how can such a simple retrieve command so much detail? You see what I'm saying? It sounds so silly. You go, you can rip a bulldog this way or that way, and it'll get a look, right? There's kind of no wrong way to work those. With a vertical jig, super controlled. When we're lifting the bait off the bottom, right, we're not just free spooling after that or dropping the rod. That's the kiss of death for a lot of people as well. They lift it up and they just like drop the rod and let it free fall. It's a controlled lift and a controlled fall. You're in constant contact. That bait is always being felt and it's being worked the entire time, which is you control the rate that it rises and you're controlling the rate that it falls.
Yeah, think compact. Mm-hmm. Everything should be compact. It should not be like some kind of, don't think about retrieving and ripping or anything that. It's just, you're going to be overdoing it.
Yeah, it's simple. And simplicity is something that musky anglers have an innate way of screwing up, right? The simpler the tactic, the more convoluted it will get.
Well, it's easy to do, you know. Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm not feeling vibration when I pull up on it. So that you tend to over retrieve a lot.
Want to feel it, but with these guys, you'll feel the weight. You're going to feel it in your bicep. But the deal with vertically jigging is committing to it, keeping the bait as vertical as possible. Right, you're going to have to move. But it's not the trolling motor's on 7, right? I always try to drift with these things, let it naturally carry. If I have current, I'm going to play to the current or play in what the current will allow to happen. But in a lake or a natural thing, get the wind drift to the best you can. And there's times to appropriately do it. You're having to fight the wind and slow your drift, right? Because if you end up dragging along the bottom, now it's this hopping, loping, non-vertical presentation, and they kind of look like a poorly worked or a poorly controlled, if you will, vertical jig. Kind of looks like a tube. Like even on downscan sonar, it lopes opposed to the up and down. What it is about that straight vertical motion seems to be the most important thing that I observe that actually gets fish to react. But like you said, controlled. Most of my vertical jigging fish come from when I'm working that bait 12 to 18 inches, right? Anything more than that doesn't really seem to be effective. Tight to the bottom. The biggest thing, too, is making bottom contact each and every time. So it's not like it's just jigging over the bottom. It's like I'm going to pull it up, I'm going to lower it down till it touches, then I'm going to pull it up and repeat. You know, it's can't be overstated, though, how hard those hooks are, or how hard those strikes are. Of the dumbest little move with not much action, with obviously not much of a visual appeal, you know, it does something to these fish. Right. When it is the right, like when a Bondi bait or another vertical jig, when vertical jigging is the answer, they let you know loud and clear, which is you take this super simple approach, you take this super controlled delivery, and you have to gorilla hook set them, because when they hit it, they're going to explode out of nowhere, manifest, and just pin the thing to the bottom, right? Only other points, if you're gearing up for this, you're thinking about doing it, like this dude's trying to get dialed in on it. Back to the rods. I always opt for an extra heavy rod when I'm vertically jigging, right? It's a little bit easier to control the bait, but more importantly, let's say you're vertically jigging 15 feet of water, right? Well, think about it. How hard does it feel when a 48-incher eats 15 feet off the boat when you're retrieving on a cast, right? It's like it feels like it's going to rip it out of your hands. It's the same, if not worse, when he's just 15 feet right below your feet, right? You don't have a lot of line out. You don't have a lot of buffer. And when you think about it that way, you go, oh, man, that fish ate right off the boat and it crushed it. 20 feet's right off the boat a lot of times, right? You're not that far. So if you're jigging in the high teens and the low 20s, having the backbone to just drive it home and be prepared for it. And I would say that, you know, the number one mistake overall about landing these fish is when it comes to vertical jigging, everyone gets mentally passive, right? Like they're just, they're staring at a tree. They're just not locked in. They're just not engaged, because it's not an engaging way to fish, especially if you're driving the boat, if you're worried about boat control, or you're watching live scope, or you're watching your down scan. I bring up down scan for this, Jay, because I was running down scan. I've been running down scan since they had down scan, right? Everybody's got, you can go to Walmart right now and buy a $99 fish finder with down scan. But the cool thing was, Bondi baits and vertical jigs were the first things you could do that is kind of live scope-esque, where if you jigged right near the trolling motor, in the proximity of the trolling motor, you know, you had your transducer there, you could watch. You would see muskies come in. It wasn't like scope, but it's pretty dang close. And, you know, to that point, you know, but if you're, say you're the second guy in the boat and there's nothing to look at other than a squirrel and a tree, most likely you're going to get caught off guard. What else would I say? I will say this, when it comes to the winter time stuff and the colder water, is paying attention to submerged creek channels is huge, right? And I'm not talking like the ones that are in the back of a bay. I'm talking like main basin or connecting zones, you know, creek channels that are subsurface, in the high teens, in the 20s, maybe out to mid 20s. You know, if you're in a reservoir, that's critical, in natural lakes, or, you know, there's so many different kinds of impoundments, but there's usually a channel there. And when you have tough conditions, you have jigging conditions, that's one of the marquee places to look.
For sure.
Think about this. And the way I've actually had a conversation similar to this a few days ago, so it's kind of fresh to the mind, but everyone thinks bucktails and weed beds, right? Bucktails, weed beds. You hear what you give an average guy, Jay. You go, hey, here's a weed bed. What are you throwing at it? What are they going to say? Bucktail, right? Well, that's just a hyper corollary. Like, they're one and one. Where it's true, there's been more than enough muskies caught out of weed beds on bucktails. But I say that to make the point of, in my brain, I fixate on channels with vertical jigs in the same way. Right, what's the first way I'm going to approach this channel? Vertical jig, right? It's you know what I'm saying? It's like that. That's the first knee jerk. Like, hey, you're throwing at a weed bed, throw a bucktail. Oh, I'm throwing a creek channel, or I'm over a creek channel. I want to work this creek channel that's submerged. This is not, you know, I'm not talking creek channel that's easily cast at. Make a submerged creek channel. If it's not trolling, it's vertical jigging. And so,
yeah, I mean, muskies and forage, I mean, if they're congregated there, it makes sense, right?
Yeah. But I just put that in your head of a corollary to go, okay, that's if you find those areas, that's my knee jerk reaction of what to do, which is, you know, it's interesting with jigging. It's fun. Well, not interesting, but just to take vertical jigging. Kind of got way too hot there for a minute, Jay. right? Like when Bondi came out, everybody flipping. Everybody was a vertical jigger there for a minute.
Right. Yeah, been tearing up fish for years doing that. Yeah.
Right. Sure. But I'm saying the masses. And it's like with any bait, there's been more baits sold than fish caught. You know, it's the way it always is. And it's like with everything, it's like most baits. That's a sad life of a musky bait, is it's, you know, the majority of them that are mass produced end up in somebody's garage. But everybody went, oh, I got to get this. There's guys that they didn't know the first thing about what they were doing with it, which nobody did at first, but that was a hot bait. And I've actually noticed how much it slacked off because it's a specialty presentation, right? You got to know when, where, and to apply it. But that is a freaking surgeon scalpel. If you know where to apply it and you have the boat control to do it, it's deadly. And I bring up, like I said, not that it's merited mass appeal. It's like every time there's hot something new or a new concept, all the normies glom onto it, right? And then they move on to something else. Where don't let that tactic get overshadowed, right? And heck, that's just an overarch thing, though, with baits, though, period. You know, everybody and their brother's throwing tubes now. All of them.
Sure.
You know, tubes are, it's like, okay, you go from bulldogs. Okay, bulldogs, 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 oh, Medusas. Okay, now we all throw Medusas. All right, now we all throw tubes. And it's funny how, and I'm just pontificating, but it's funny how if you watch the cycles of the way I'm just talking, the Pavlov, the doc talking, the people talking about stuff, of how something is, it's that hot bait philosophy. That bait's hot. That's a hot bait. You know, they've never seen that. Where that just is garbage. You know, it's a tool. And something even that no one's talking about anymore. Say, what frickin' a Salmo minnow or a Siebel minnow. Remember those, Jay? Nobody talks about those anymore. H2O cranky nitro. H2O barbarian. Ain't hot baits. They're not burning up the sosh on those anymore, right? But I keep them in the boat because you get freaking my follow-up behind a Bondi right now, and it's kind of ended up being that go-to more than a fuzzy is that H2O.
Yeah, those barbarians are cool.
Uh-huh. And you go, and I'm just talking, like I said, concept here, but about how baits are perceived, I guess, more so than anything. But okay, so that H2O barbarian, it looks like a giant rattle trap. It can be used as a giant rattle trap, but its applications are far greater than that, and it's just like, you just don't see people buying them. You just don't hear people doing anything with them because it just
you
like,
could you could use it as a rattle trap that wanders too. That's the cool thing about it. Yeah,
they're bad.
Three
to the
different
bone.
Depth settings. Yeah,
right. They're bad to the bone, but again, if it's kind of the course of a bait that is not stupidly simple, and it's not like in the hive mind consciousness. That it kind of ends up on that back burner or that afterthought.
Yeah, but maybe that's it, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, I brought that up just because, like I said, how hot. I mean, it was vertical. I mean, everybody and your brother was vertical jigging, and then it moves on to the next, which is tactically a tactic should never be ever. A tactic should never be off the table. You know what I'm saying? Ever. If a tactic works, a tactic is going to be viable forever in some capacity when applicable, right? So you're never, like, trolling will always have a place. I've had that conversation with people. Well, trolling is pales in comparison to scoping open water. Let's not talk about opinions and what you think of scoping or anything of that nature. Just trolling is better, or excuse me, scoping open water is better than trolling water. Well, depends on what the goal is, depends on the population distribution, depends on this, that, and the other, right? I don't go scoping, but whatever. However, that doesn't mean trolling's not impactful or useful, but it's you can't take away the application of trolling and making bottom contact and covering things. You know what I'm saying? You can't say like this tactic supersedes that tactic. And I think that's what's happened a lot of times with the vertical jigging thing, where it turned into more of people were applying tubes in the same bandwidth, if that makes any sense. I am just cold and tired and losing my mind. But do you get what I'm saying? Like,
no, for sure.
Yeah, it's one of those deals where just yeah, don't follow the trends, kids. That's the number one thing. Don't follow trends. Anyway, I got to take a hot shower. Actually, I got to go in the hot tub. That's what I need, Jay. I need to wake my brain up. Hot tub. Send in them questions. Jay needs them, folks. If you don't send in a question, Jay might be shot in the head.
Oh, boy.
Right? You don't know. It could be your question that saves his life. Send them in. We'll do another Win Steve's Mustache.
Yeah.
We'll do that for next week. And guys, if I sent your stuff out already, I promise I sent it the cheapest shipping, so it will be slow. Because it's free.
There you go.
It's the sweepstakes. It's a very important prize. Next week, we'll be swinging the bat heavy there on your new. We probably won't. We always say that. It's just going to be the same as always, Jay.
With the exception of a special.
Jay's got a everybody pay attention to Jay, folks. He's got a special. Going to sing you a little New Year's Eve song. Anyway, Jay Bird, say goodnight.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Later.
Press fast forward. Blades clanging loud from the other boat. Ripping rubber too big because they think they know. Cut me off hard because I'm fishing slow. Big motor just quit. Now I got to give him a tow. I don't know what you think you take me as, or understand the intelligence that Jaybird has. From rags to riches, baby, I'm not dumb. I got 99.